Welcome to Lena Live. This is Julian Lampert, the producer, and I have been starting to host this show more frequently. It is normally hosted, of course, by my mother, Lena Muirmond, and about 3 months ago, we started to take turns in hosting the show and sometimes host them together. Today, we are going to have a musical exploration of two very great composers. That's Joseph Haydn, or often also known as Franz Joseph Haydn, and Ludwig van Beethoven. The music of Beethoven is very closely related and profoundly intertwined with the music of Haydn, because not only because Haydn was one of Beethoven's teachers, but also because Haydn, at the time that Beethoven was still developing and studying, Haydn was really probably the most important composer of his time in Europe. And we will listen to music of both composers, and then we will also explore some pieces of their lives in connection with their music. We were originally supposed to have actually a guest for today's show, and I had a concert to do in the last minute. I substituted for a pianist, so that took place actually earlier. It took place twice, in fact, last week and earlier today. So we had an interesting schedule conflict, and we thought, why not, as we say, why not just wing it and try a last-minute broadcast on discussing some classical music. And next week, however, we will return to our regularly scheduled programs. So we begin with the composer Franz Joseph Haydn, who was born in 1732. Haydn was an Austrian composer, and he lived in Austria really all of his life. And Haydn was an incredibly important figure in classical music because he solidified certain musical forms that were already taking shape before his time. And he established those forms, such as the string quartet, the symphony, and also the piano sonata, trios, piano trios, which is a combination featuring a piano, a violin, and cello. So Haydn took those genres, those musical forms, and established them to such a high degree of solidity that really what Haydn did had an influence over every single development in classical music up until our time today. That's really how powerful he was. And to some degree, the music of Haydn may be slightly underrated because of the overwhelming genius of Mozart. And Mozart, who was an extraordinary master, never has been any question about that, and substantially younger than Haydn. However, even in Mozart's style, We can say that most of what Mozart produced, the musical forms that he used, can be traced back to the work of his senior colleague, Franz Joseph Haydn. Haydn, it's very famous, it's a very famous fact that Haydn was a huge admirer of Mozart's. And in fact, Haydn considered that Mozart was the finest composer, living composer of his time, which is a pretty extraordinary statement coming from someone like Haydn. And that's an even more interesting comment considering the genius of Beethoven, who was, of course, of the next generation after Mozart and of course, after Haydn. Just to give you a chronological perspective of the time frames that we're talking about here, Haydn was born in 1732, and he died in 1809. Beethoven was born in 1770. And died in 1827. So Beethoven was over 50 years younger than Haydn. And I beg your pardon, 40 years, not 50, 40. My musical skills sometimes affect my arithmetic. And mathematics is an art, of course, but there's a certain numerical precision that that can never be compromised. So Beethoven met Haydn when he was quite young. While Beethoven was quite young, Beethoven was in his early 20s, and Beethoven met Haydn. It looks like that documents show, as far as documents can show, Beethoven met Haydn on Haydn's way back to Vienna from London. And Haydn stopped in the city of Bonn in Germany. And at that time, Bonn was the capital of the electorate of Cologne. And it was there most likely that Beethoven had first met Haydn. And the documentation is not too clear around this period, but it seems that on Haydn's invitation, Beethoven left Bonn and traveled to Vienna to study with Haydn, not just to study with Haydn, for Beethoven to further his own general music education. Returning to Haydn's childhood formative years, he was born to a fairly well-established family, and in fact, his parents took some pains to ensure that Haydn would have a solid music education. And that was quite unusual for parents who were not musicians themselves, although Haydn's father allegedly was a folk musician as an amateur. And generally the family was quite musical, but certainly not at all professional. And it was especially unusual, in fact, it's always been unusual, including these days, for a family to support a musical talent, because the arts have never been thought of as an area that is as promising as law or medicine. And Haydn was sent off when he was, I believe, a age 6, 7, or 8, he was still a very young child, he was sent off to live with a music teacher. And Haydn received most of his training in this, under the guidance of this teacher. And this teacher's name was Johann Matthias Frank. And in fact, Mr. Frank was a relative of the family. And Haydn spent quite a number of years there, and there is documentation to show that Haydn was quite unhappy during these years. In fact, he recalled often feeling hungry and was generally quite miserable when he was not studying music. He was, however, extremely gifted as a musician, and he didn't start right off with learning the keyboard. He was actually, as most musically gifted people, children at that time were, he was launched on a musical education that simultaneously included studying the keyboard, the violin, and other string instruments. And he also studied singing. And it was quite clear from the start that Haydn had a very strong gift as a singer. And that's something that we normally don't think of as Haydn, something that we normally don't associate with Haydn. Because of the wealth of his instrumental works. But his singing, the singing that he studied in his childhood, and also the choir singing that he had done as, in fact, he was admitted to no more, no less, the St. Stephen's Cathedral in Vienna. Haydn sang there as a chorister. He was a choir boy there. And this experience would have a very strong influence in years later when Haydn wrote much material for singers. And of course, in his last years, the two great choral masterpieces were the oratorios, The Seasons, and The Creation. And those two works especially reflected Haydn's very, very profound faith in Catholicism. He was a deeply religious man. And the final 10 years or so of his life is, very generally speaking, when he wrote his finest music, although there are some exceptions to that. Generally, with classical composers, we cannot really say that the best, so to speak, the best or the finest works were written in the last years of the composer's life. In fact, Beethoven is a great example here, where some of his greatest works were early works, like the first piano sonatas, the first string quartets. But in Haydn's case, his most valuable output occurred within the last decade of his life, generally speaking. Let us hear a piece of music by Haydn. This is his piano sonata in C minor. And this is a performance that I made in New York a few years ago at the Westchester Musicians Guild. And this is a very unusual piece of music because it's a sonata for piano, but it's a very adventurous, maybe adventurous is not the right word. It's a riskier kind of work because Haydn takes the musical form of the sonata in the first movement, and he creates an extremely unusual kind of tonal picture and atmosphere that really was not ever done before his time. Because the sonata was also a form in itself that wasn't at its highest peak until Haydn's time. And the element that makes this sonata also extremely interesting is that it's only the first movement that is highly unusual for a sonata. The second movement and the third movement are much, much more recognizable and much more traditional in their form. The first movement is an allegro. The second movement is an andante. And the last movement is a rondo, a very passionate rondo. So we will hear this sonata in C minor. This is number 16 and Hoboken number 22 in a performance that I made in New York at the Westchester Musicians Guild just a few years ago. Here we are with Haydn's C minor sonata. We just heard the first movement of Haydn's Piano Sonata number 16 in C minor, Hoboken number 22, in a performance that I gave at the Westchester Musicians Guild in New York just a few years ago. Let us take a brief pause to hear from our sponsor, Calvary Hospital.
Dear Calvary Hospital, James Lee was a true hero. Saving lives was something he always wanted to do, whether as a paratrooper for the 82nd Airborne or as a New York City fireman. They called him Jimmy. I was proud to call him Dad. But when terminal illness ravaged his body, this man's man knew that this was one life that could not be saved. Not even by me, an experienced nurse. It just wasn't fair that he had to suffer like this. But then Calvary stepped in. You relieved his enormous pain and not only gave him the peace and comfort he deserved, but you also gave me and my family a chance to enjoy his final days, smiling and laughing, together one last time. How can we ever forget what you mean to us? Yours truly, Colleen Lee.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital, where life continues. Call us at 718-518-2000. Thank you.
Dear Calvary.
Welcome back to the Lena Live Radio Hour. I'm Julian Lambert, the producer, and we are listening to a musical exploration of two giants of classical music, Franz Joseph Haydn, who was born in 1732, lived until 1809, and Ludwig van Beethoven, who was born in 1770 and died in 1827. And we just heard earlier one of Haydn's most precious works, the C minor piano sonata, which is a very unusually sad piece for the musical form of a piano sonata, which was just finding its peak. Actually, not its peak. It found its peak with Beethoven, but it found its first solid footing with the music of Haydn. What's also remarkable about Haydn and very unusual for the arts world was that he was an extraordinary businessman. In fact, he was a very hard bargainer when it came to the publishing of his works. And this most likely, and he also had the reputation of being a very, very tough businessman, tough to deal with. And that must have come from his very difficult earlier years when he struggled and in fact he was even thrown out of the choir where he was singing, a very prominent choir, and he really had a very hard struggle until he finally came along a series of extremely good positions within the courts of the kingdoms of the time, and the royal and noble families of the time in Austria had hired Haydn to be the musical director of their courts, of their palaces. And by the point that happened to Haydn, he had really established himself very prominently. Unlike, and when I say established himself prominently, I also mean in the financial sense. And that was extremely unusual, especially for someone at that particular time. And in fact, Beethoven in this regard is also interesting, because even though Beethoven was not known for his business skills. Beethoven made history in one very important sense, together with his revolutionary music. He was among the first composers who at one point eventually was entirely supported by the sponsorship of patrons. And Beethoven encountered what was very fortunate to encounter certain patrons who had a giant respect, admiration, and appreciation for Beethoven's art. And the most famous of these was the Archduke Rudolf. And the Archduke Rudolf and Beethoven had a very close friendship, and Beethoven dedicated many pieces to the Archduke Rudolf. And this really was an extraordinary example in musical history where, and very unusual as well, when you think of the numbers of musicians and geniuses, and not only the great geniuses whom many of us have heard, like Franz Schubert, who may have been the very poorest of all of the great classical composers. But there were also many composers who were not famous at all, but who were also geniuses who just barely managed to survive. So the example of Haydn is really very interesting in how he secured the positions of musical director in the different palaces, especially the Esterházy court. That is where Haydn essentially made his professional home for a number of years. And with Beethoven, beginning with the middle of his life, he had been supported by a number of patrons. Beethoven, of course, is extraordinarily famous for the terrible affliction that he started to suffer by the end of the 18th century. By the late 1790s, he was in his mid-20s when he started to lose his hearing. And he became, by around 1814, 1815, he was virtually entirely deaf. And this is one of the, not just one of the most extraordinary testaments of human willpower, but it's also a testament of the triumph of not only the human spirit overall, but in the absolutely unfathomable power of the human brain and what it can do. And the brain to this day is one of the most least understood phenomenons in the universe. I'm certainly not a brain specialist, but it's an area that I'm very interested in, especially in connection with the arts. And I do know that that is much more as we do know about the brain today than we knew even really at the end of the 20th century, and obviously much more than we knew in centuries past. When we compare how much we know about other parts of the body and in biology and biology of different life forms on the earth, the human brain is still not nearly enough understood. So the accomplishment that Beethoven made was just was extraordinary, and it continues to this day to serve an extraordinary scientific purpose, is what I meant to say. One very important detail about Beethoven's deafness is this. Most great composers were able to compose without an instrument. In other words, they were trained. Not only were they extraordinary geniuses, but they were also trained in a very specific way in which their inner ear was highly, highly developed. And one of the ways in which they trained was in the study of dictations. Dictations meaning exercises where a student was expected to write down on music paper the sounds that were played or sung to him or to her. It's very much like a lot of the dictation that that most of us had in elementary school, when the teacher would read off a sentence and we were supposed to write on paper what the teacher said to us, including the punctuation marks. So it's very much along those same lines. And if a person is very well trained in that regard, if he or she can write complicated dictation exercises, that is, be able to write down most of what he or she hears, that gives a person an extremely powerful inner ear. And it's because of that training that most composers, not just Beethoven, in fact, not most, I will say all great composers, were able to write without having to use a piano or other instruments. There are certain famous examples of people like Stravinsky, the great Russian composer of the 20th century. He was famous for using the piano to write. But it's very, very clear that if, for example, and this is a crazy example, but if we hijacked Stravinsky and locked him up in a room and told him to write a piece of music, he would have absolutely no problem in doing so, even though the music may have been something very different from what he would have written using a piano. But composers like Shostakovich, also of the 20th century, he was very famous for not using a piano, for composing entirely based on his inner ear. And most composers wrote that way. So the fact that Beethoven could continue to write music while having been deaf is frankly not that unusual, because he didn't really require an instrument to compose. What is much, much more astonishing and extraordinary is that he continued to compose after suffering such an unthinkable trauma as losing his hearing, because he may always have been able to hear his own music internally, but it's an entirely different question, a totally different issue of not being able to hear any sounds externally and not being able to hear music produced by others. That must have been indescribably painful. In fact, it was so painful to Beethoven that when he was advised to move to a small Austrian town that's called Heiligenstadt, just outside Vienna. Beethoven was at the peak of his depression when his hearing started to diminish very rapidly. This was at the beginning of the 19th century, and he didn't entirely lose his hearing by that point, but he had lost a great deal of it, and he was also aware that it was growing worse. And it was in this town of Heiligenstadt that he wrote what became known as the Heiligenstadt Testament. And this document, which has been preserved, was a letter which Beethoven wrote to his brothers, where he related to them his thoughts on suicide, something that Beethoven strongly considered doing. And he really could not at all come to terms with what was happening to him. What's very famous, what's famously written in this testament is that Beethoven ultimately decided against suicide for one reason and one reason only, and that was his art. He was unconditionally devoted to his art, and that music was so important to him that his love for music and his devotion to his musical artwork transcended the indescribable pain that he felt from his deafness. And my God, how fortunate we are that Beethoven continued for almost 30 years to write music. And in fact, in his last period, the last period of his life, Beethoven's work can be more or less divided into three periods. It was in his last period, when he was virtually entirely deaf, that he wrote some of the most extraordinary pieces of music that has been conceived by anyone. And overall, these pieces are one of the most extraordinary creations of art of all time, across all art forms. And it's for that reason that Beethoven is really considered as the single most revolutionary composer of all time. I'm very strongly against calling him the first romantic. I think that's an error made by musicologists and music historians. I think that to play Beethoven romantically just destroys the incredible nerve, the nervous tension, and the extraordinary power, the so-called shaking a fist in one's sky, that ferocious image that is so distinct with Beethoven has absolutely nothing romantic about it. I think instead of calling him the first romantic, he should be known as the most revolutionary composer of all time. And even though in the 20th century we had some extraordinary revolutions in music, by all accounts, there's no question about that. Those revolutions were not as earth-shattering as what Beethoven did. And I think many people would disagree with me there, but I think many would agree as well. The way in which Beethoven was revolutionary was really in the incredible bravery of his music. There's especially one piece that he wrote. It's called the Große Fuge. It's a fugue which he wrote for string quartet. And this piece was originally supposed to be the final movement of one of his last string quartets. But this one movement was considered to be so incredibly difficult and just virtually unplayable that Beethoven was asked to write an entirely different final movement. And Beethoven decided to save this fugue for string quartet as a separate piece in and of itself. And in fact, he even arranged that fugue for piano four hands that is to be played by two pianists at one keyboard. That piece, the Große Fuge, it might be the single most ferocious piece of music ever written for string quartet. And Igor Stravinsky, who himself was an incredible revolutionary in music in the 20th century, he so perfectly said about that piece that the Große Fuge by Beethoven will forever remain a contemporary work. And it's all the more unthinkable that the composer of a piece as the Große Fuge could have been deaf. That is just extraordinary. One of the pieces by Beethoven that painted this incredibly revolutionary image around him was a piano sonata it's his 23rd piano sonata that after his death was nicknamed the Appassionata. And Beethoven, in fact, considered this piece to be his best piano sonata up to that time. And it was written between 1804 and 1806. Let's hear the first movement of the sonata. This is, as I said, the piano sonata number 23 in F minor by Beethoven. We'll just hear the first movement. Thank you. And that was a fragment of Beethoven's Sonata number 23 in F minor, the Appassionata Sonata. We are, as always, in a shortage of time. Never enough time to give full justice to exploring the lives of the people whom we profile on this program. But hopefully we give enough of a glimpse to add some enrichment, certainly to our lives and hopefully to yours. Let us hear once again from our sponsor, Calvary Hospital.
My dad was at the end of his life, suffering from pancreatic cancer. I knew there was only one place that could relieve his pain and ours as well, Calvary Hospital. His wish was to die at home, so it was Calvary Home Hospice that provided Dad with the quality of life he deserved, filled with exceptional comfort and warmth. He passed on with dignity and grace, and we were all there with him. A year later, my mom needed the same Calvary care. And once again, Calvary's expert home hospice staff was there for us. My parents gave me unqualified love their entire lives. There was no better way for me to return this love than with Calvary's care. Yours truly, Deborah DiGregorio.
This is Frank Calamari, president of Calvary Hospital. Our world-renowned hospice program brings our expert end-of-life care right into your home. Call us at 718-518-2465.
We just heard from our sponsor, whom we are very grateful to have, Calvary Hospital of New York City. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today on Lena Live. We had an enlightening exploration of the music of Beethoven and Haydn. Beethoven having been a student, one of Haydn's students. Please join us next week on Thursday at our usual time, the same channel on BBS Radio, whom already for nearly 3 years now, we are so happy to work with. This is Julian Lampert signing off. Thanks for joining us.